Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, one and all. Welcome to Nerd Melt Theater at Meltdown Comics in Hollywood, California. Harmontown is now in session. Won't you please join me in welcoming to the stage the mayor of Harmontown, Dan Harmon.
Thank you. So much to do because we took a week off last week, and thank you all for coming. I know you had so many comic books to go through because you were all at Comic-Con. That's why we all go there now, for the comic books, right? It's not Sundance or anything. It's a comic book convention. I mean, we could talk about Comic-Con. We could talk about my upper endoscopy, which I survived and had a Buddhistic existential experience during. Because I got it rough. Boy, what a surgical procedure I went through. But we can talk about all that. But the truth is, it's 8:10, and our first guest has to tend bar downtown at 8:30. He's got to leave. So I want you to welcome one of our wonderful Feral Audio podcast brothers, a pioneer of the podcasting medium. In fact, I think he was doing it before everyone had a podcast. Jeff, you're a Studs Terkel fan, aren't you?
Totally.
I really thought you would be. You're like an old...
I know very little about Studs.
Right. Well, anyways.
I'm a fan of his name more than anything.
Well, this guy in some respects is kind of the anti-Dan Harmon because he has very meaningful conversations in good interviews with very interesting people. And all I do is do bad interviews with people from Feral Audio. Please welcome Matt Dwyer. Yeah, just grab one of those.
All right.
If you want to drink, someone I could have someone make you one.
Or... Oh no, I don't want to work yet. So just if somebody else could bartend for me right now.
Your podcast is called Conversations with Matt Dwyer.
Yeah, very narcissistic of me.
I'm proud to be a label mate of yours because I listened to a little bit of it today. You're one of those guys that I kind of. I wish I was like, but I know I never could be.
Like I don't even want to be like me.
You're a listener and not a talker. I mean, you're somebody that actually is, as our friend Seek Donnelly, who came out here, who's an aneurysm survivor and therefore a shamanic representative. I said, what do we have to do, those of us in the land of certainty? And he said, give more than you take. And I think guys like you give a little more than you take because you book really provocative guests and have really interesting conversations. And all I do is stand up here and go, I had an endoscopy.
Yeah, well, when I started the show, I was hoping I would be really funny while talking to interesting people. But when you're talking to, like, a Black Panther or Wayne Kramer talking about his prison stint, it's really hard to make jokes.
Yeah. It's like, but so, you don't have to, because that Black Panther dude, for instance, I was riveted. I had to do, and I'm trying to write the first episode of Community right now, but I got you cranked up like I'm Terry Gross doing my research. I didn't want to embarrass myself. You're an adult coming in. I didn't want to be like, so what's your podcast about? I wanted to know.
So Dan, what is his podcast about?
It's about this Black Panther guy.
362 episodes with one Black Panther guy. We go each crime to each food. They also, because they did a lot of soup kitchen stuff. We talk about each soup extensively.
What was that guy's name? Pat O'Neill?
Pete O'Neill. Yeah, he was
a little less Irish than.
Really weird though. He does have a brogue. Black Panther from Kansas City with a brogue.
Why can't we get over this class system that's oppressing the African-American? We've got to fight the powers that be.
Power to the people, motherfuckers.
Someone's trying to take me horseshoe-shaped civil rights.
Very funny. Three white guys doing this. But one thing that he said that he said something so, well, I don't know if it was profound or if it was just sort of like narcissistically. I'm like, that's what I'm always saying, and a Black Panther's saying it. Because he said, by the way, just quick backstory, this guy was like kind of basically trumped up charges sometime in the 60s and has been in Tanzania ever since.
Yeah, but like before he became a Black Panther, he was like a street hood. He was a pimp, I believe, which he doesn't even like to talk about. And then the Black Panthers changed his life. His charges were trumped up, but he does admit that he did smuggle some guns in his time. So he had done some pretty crazy things.
And he talks about how the Black Panthers, the thing that he said that really perked my ears up was when he was talking about how the first thing they tried to do to neutralize the Black Panthers propaganda-wise was to call them a racist organization. And he said, racist organization, all we were preaching from the beginning was about class systems. And I was like, yes, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Race is an artificial construct. I'm always saying, you don't have to read a fucking book to figure this out. You do not have to. I mean, it's great if smart people do smart work to try to figure this out, but it's right under everyone's nose. Children don't understand what race is. You get taught this stuff. This is about poor people and rich people. And he was saying, of course, as a Black organization, your primary thrust is going to be on what the Black community can do. As you would expect poor white people to have a primary thrust maybe on what poor white people could do. I'm putting words in his mouth at this point. But he and then he said we should all eat more bacon?
No.
Now I'm just trying to get back on Atkins. Black Panther said it. But I was, it's always about class. It's always been about class. And it was so interesting that he could have the calm state of mind, having been basically exiled to Tanzania, where he's running an orphanage, that he was so like cool and objective about the global state of affairs.
Yeah, he was. But we've talked besides the podcast too, and he said it took him a long time to get there, because I guess there was times in Tanzania where he'd like chase some dudes down the street with a knife and stuff. Like, he used to be a little temperamental, but now he's like 77. So
he's like getting a little tuckered out.
Yeah, those. But he's still like this big, strong motherfucker. Like, you wouldn't want to screw with him even at 77. He's a badass.
You also on that list of your legitimate interviewings. Before we get to the thing that I think I really want to plug because it drops, I think Monday. Are we dropping it Monday? Can you give? Okay.
Oh yeah,
but that Monsanto guy—that was another big one. Like you,
a lot of Monsanto fans here tonight.
I didn't know if that was going to be somebody booing Monsanto or pro.
No, they love bioengineered fruit. This is Los Angeles. Nothing grows here unless it's part giraffe.
It's more comic book sounding to have
bioengineered fruit. Yeah, these guys are nerds. They love sci-fi. Like, of course, they want their oranges to glow in the dark. You had this guy who wasn't specifically a Monsanto employee.
He worked for the main research company that worked for Monsanto, and he couldn't. It sounds kind of bullshitty when you're like he couldn't say his name because it sounds like you're just being weird and. But he couldn't because they'd come after him. And if you've ever seen any documentaries, Monsanto likes to fuck people in the ass. And he couldn't, you know, he would get sued to high fucking heaven. So.
Right.
But the greatest thing about that interview is there's a really poignant moment he and I were having. And he couldn't see this, but behind him, his dog was taking a shit. And it was a and it was like one of the, and the dog was just chasing its own stringy shit behind him. And I was like, why don't I videotape this show?
Why don't you blow the whistle on that? Talk about Agent Orange and pineapples.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What do you do when you like? Were you invested at all in that topic, that area of politics before you found out you were going to get to sit down with a Monsanto whistleblower?
Yeah, I mean, I would. I'm pretty fucking way to the left. Like, I might make Chomsky look conservative. Yeah, I'm always interested in political things. I mean, when I started doing the show, I was hoping to just talk to anybody because I feel like most people have interesting stories. But then I'm a weirdo, so I started going after, like, Black Panthers and right. political radicals.
But how do you go after them? The Black Panther explained how you go after them in the 60s.
It's amazing who you can find on Facebook. I found Pete on Facebook, and... Yeah, once you start talking to a bunch of weirdos, these weirdos go, hey, I got some more weirdos you can talk to.
Right.
And a guy I've interviewed twice, Shane Bugbee, and I grew up together. And Shane, in high school, was like publishing G.G. Allen, John Wayne Gacy. It was like fresh out of high school, he was Gacy's art dealer.
Like a guy who dealt art to John Wayne Gacy. Like he'd bring
By the way, who nobody booed. Monsanto got a boo.
What has Monsanto done for any birthday party?
True. But Shane has worked with this.
Did someone say Joe Rogan's joke? I thought, or was that some weird mental projection? I thought I heard the words Joe Rogan's joke,
Jim Gaffigan's joke, asshole.
I'm not a stand-up. I'm sorry if my John Wayne Gacy joke was on someone else's set list. Anyways, please continue.
Oh, just Shane is if, and you should listen to his episodes and Google Shane Bugbee because he's a guy who's done. Incredibly crazy things, and like G.G. Allen, he stole Ed Gein's tombstone and toured it around the country. Started his own soda pop company. He's just some guy who does weird things like that. But he's hooked me up with a lot of these people, like Paul Krasner. He hooked me up with Paul Krasner. If you don't know who Paul Krasner is,
Paul Krasner.
Paul Krasner created The Realist, which was like this really. Heavy-duty satirical magazine in the 60s that was... And the greatest thing about Paul Krasner is he tripped on acid with Groucho Marx. So that's, and he tells the story on my show.
So he really saw time fly like an arrow and fruit fly like a banana. That actually happened.
And Shane's the one who hooked me up with Lucien Greaves.
Lucien Greaves. That's the next thing to talk to you about. Okay, so now you can take over anytime you want. I just want to see if I can get this right. Is it Woodsboro? Is that the name of this?
The Westboro Baptist Church.
Those are the God Hates Fags people.
God Hates Fags.
Joe Rogan's joke. Westboro Baptists, those are the more easily known as the God Hates Fags people. They hold a sign that says God Hates Fags anywhere where they think anyone will be watching. Like, for instance, as they threatened, they were going to do it at the funeral for the Boston Marathon victims. That they were going to be... we're going to do it there, too. We do it everywhere where the heat is. Because when a message is that important, they're going to... You gotta get your billboard up at the corner of Fountain and Wilshire. So the head of their church, Phelps... Fred Phelps?
Fred Phelps.
He has a dead brother?
I think it was his mother.
So this organization called the Temple, the Satanic Temple.
Yeah.
They did what they called a pink mass on the grave of his grandmother.
Oh, turning her gay in the afterlife.
They did a satanic gay ritual.
So Fred Phelps' mom is getting hit with a strap-on as we speak.
And it really blows my mind. I went down a rabbit hole today. I was like, okay, who are these Satanist guys? I went to their site and their name is the setup and the punchline is the fact that they're good people. as far as their tenets go, I went down there. They have 9 tenets on their front page of their site. You follow your compassion, be good to other humans, never push your beliefs on anyone else, let people do whatever they want, always keep an open mind. All this nothing to do with Satan or eating a chicken heart or anything.
Yeah, they don't do any, that's the weird misconception. And we talk about the misconceptions of Satanism, and we also talk about how this pink mass, which the media treated as something that's been going on for hundreds of years.
Yeah, right. Sorry, I should be clear because I'm a bad interviewer. This drops on Monday on your podcast, Conversations with Matt Dwyer. You got to have a conversation with Lucian Greaves,
yes.
The head of the Satanic Temple.
And I really rarely get to brag about anything in my life, but he turned down a bunch of people, including Marin, to do my show. So that's cool. Take that, Mark Maron, and all your money.
Take that, Mark Maron. Can you book us on your show?
And there is going to be, because there is something, and I wish I could say what it is, but I can't. There's going to be a big twist in this whole Lucian Greaves thing, which Shane Bugby, who I talked about, is going to break on in Vice magazine, and then I'm going to do a follow-up interview with Lucian as well.
Wow, it's like NBC's Starcross Thursdays back in the old days. Matt Damon's going to be in Central Perk, but then also Daphne's going to be on MASH. I don't know. I haven't watched TV in a long time. It's good that new media is getting there too. But how did that interview go? What's he like? What's this
he's
fella
like? He's like the nicest guy in the world, and he's like super smart.
It's like not surprising. I mean, this seems like a pretty on its face, it seems like a very like juvenile like fuck you thing to do anything on someone's grave. But then you peel back the layers and you peel back the layers, and you're going like, I actually cut and pasted a comment from an argument about it on Facebook that I thought justified the existence of comment sections, because it's like they're all. Somebody said about this, because he did this pink mass on the grave of a dead woman, making this guy's loved one gay in the afterlife. But these are the people who, I mean, they their whole belief system is about freedom of religion. Not to put too fine a point on it, they hide behind the concept of freedom of religion in order to do something that is not really religious, or and is certainly unconstitutional, which is to imply that other people don't have the freedom to do whatever the fuck they want. And so this is sort of like turnabout is fair play, and it's kind of funny. Just having two chicks make out on this lady's grave, and I like to go where the sense of humor seems to be. But somebody said, like, in a comment section, and of course, this is someone said, two wrongs don't make a right. Okay, that's the response to the what he did. And then this fella, Corey Hammond, I'll name him, I don't care. He said, and overused cliche statements don't make you intelligent. The Westboro Baptist Church has always been lawful. Half of his kids are First Amendment lawyers and goes to court daily to fight their actions, and they always win. The best way to beat them is at their own game, and this is it. If you aren't explicit enough to do it, the WBC is, so be explicit enough. In other words, I don't know, then you go, okay, so we're just getting in a knife fight with people who love knives, and where's that going to go? But it's certainly, you know, it makes you go, like, yeah, these guys are calling themselves Satanists and making themselves heroes, and it's kind of a wonderful, ticklish thing.
It's great, and he's got prosecutors coming after him, and there was a great quote at the end of an article about him recently where he said, if I go to prison, I'm going to use my powers of Satan to turn it into one big gay orgy.
Talk about light work. I mean, that is not a tough road to hoe.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're halfway home already.
I don't know. How does a guy like me be a guy like you? Like, do you read more than me? What do you just? Are you just more interested in other people than yourself? Do you drink more? Drink less? Do you
Oh no, I drink often during my interviews. Maybe that's not the key. But I just realized early on, because I probably in some of my first interviews, I'm trying to be like Johnny Glib, like waka woo, and then I was just like, this isn't about you. Like, I just quickly realized it's like these people are. I'm talking to people who are far more intelligent than I'll ever be, and far more fucking interesting. So shut the fuck up and learn something.
I can't break that barrier. How do you get there?
You're smarter than me, so maybe that's
it's
different.
That's not true.
But it's like I interviewed this guy Dan Kovalik, who sued Coca-Cola for paramilitary.
My name's Dan. That's all I thought. when you said that.
No, sorry.
Please continue.
Oh, no, he's a lawyer who sued Coca-Cola for death squads in
Doug Stanhope's joke.
Coca-Cola was killing union organizers in Colombia, and he found a loophole in our government or our laws to sue Coke. And it's like, there's a documentary about it, actually, and we don't talk about it much. But like, I'm like, what am I going to fucking joke around or out-talk this guy about?
Right.
It's like, this guy's a super brand.
But how do you ask? What do you ask? I mean, how do you – you have to engage them and get them to the places where you want them to say stuff. But so you have to know all kinds of stuff, and then – I'm such a bad interviewer. It's the running joke.
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe part of it is I came from an improv background because I don't like have a lot of notes. When I have like maybe five things written down, and I'll just if something they usually somebody will say something that piques my interest, and I'll wait for them to finish, and hopefully I can just like be like, how about that? Like,
do you take notes while they're talking?
Mental notes.
Mental like notes.
I interviewed this guy just a couple days ago who's an amazing artist, Rod Luff, or Rodrigo Luff, but look up his work. But he said something about how sometimes he'll create something and he'll find it embarrassing, and then he talked for a bit, and then I was like, all right, why would somebody be embarrassed about it, like this brilliant artist, who's actually here, by the way. Why would this guy who's incredibly brilliant be embarrassed by something he creates? And so I wanted to... And it comes down to we're all just fucking insecure and weird.
Yeah. We're all ashamed of ourselves deep down. And I've been through several PR experiences lately where I've suddenly realized, okay, we're all ashamed of ourselves. And from now on, instead of trying to get everyone to like me because I'm ashamed of myself, I'm only going to care about the people who don't make their shame other people's problems. I think that I'm just going to bother to say that there's shitty people in the world. I'm not gonna keep preaching this thing where I'm like, I love everybody. Fuck half of the people. Yeah. Specifically the half of the people that make their very human shame someone else's problem. Someone that says, like, I'm ashamed of myself, so shut up over there. Stop talking. Don't say that. Everybody be quiet. Everybody be careful. Because I have to be, because I have some weird fucking thing about me, or I don't know how to talk. Like, fuck those people. I'm sure they're not evil, but you gotta have an enemy, I guess. According to them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Tom DeLuise's joke.
It's interesting because I can safely say I've spoken with some people who are legitimately creative geniuses, and they all have...
Thank you.
I was just about, Dan Harmon. But yeah, and it's all, like, none of them really fully go, yeah, I got this.
Yeah, I mean, well, you can't, yeah, you can't.
You can't. Yeah.
Not and help people. Not and be effective at all.
Yeah.
Like you have to be fucking terrified in order to be somewhat effective, I would think. Otherwise, what do you, yeah, you'd be some weirdo.
You have to have a little, I don't know if this is the Irish working class bullshit in me, but like, I think you can't really be good at anything unless you kind of hate yourself just a little.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I love about myself is how much I hate myself.
I hate how much I love you.
All right. You're a better interviewer than me. Ask me something provocative. And
See what Dan did just there? He created a construct where he would have someone ask things about him.
I'm looking for a closer. I'm not going to generate it because I'm not him.
Yeah, but you could have had him interview somebody in the audience. You chose.
Oh, okay. Good idea, Jeff. Very smart. Jeff's sober tonight. He's on a cleanse.
I've been sober for like the last 10 shows.
I ate 4 steaks today.
Hey, Enty, will you have a conversation with Matt Dwyer? This is Enty.
How are you?
Hi. Oh, shit balls. I only had a little bit of vodka and I'm falling off the goddamn chair.
Enty's a regular here, but okay, just dive in.
Without knowing anything about what you do, what do you do? Right fucking getting deep. I mean, are you a creative sort? Or?
Well, yeah, I want to do writing and stuff, but yeah. I recently was let go of a job that I had.
What was the job?
Black Panther.
I mean, was it?
He was an Irish Black Panther. Trumped up charges.
I worked, like, in social media, and I did, like, movie marketing stuff.
That's just called tweeting that you liked Iron Man 3. That's not... That never paid anything.
So are you taking that as like, all right, I could fuck this, I'm just going to dedicate my life to writing?
Oh, well, no, I wanted to do writing before that.
No, I know, but taking the job is, like, losing your job is maybe, like, a sign of...
Yeah, like maybe it was time that it needed to happen. Because I kind of wasn't happy there, so I was like, okay.
See, Dan, you guys, I'm going to hit pause in this interview. You're not watching because you're making yourself another cocktail over there. But I've just noticed a little trick that you can employ when you interview people. He's looking right at him.
It's very uncomfortable for people with my condition.
Okay, sorry. Play.
What kind of writing are you going to do?
Screenwriting.
You should have said sitcom writing.
Well, I actually...
he's doing the long con.
It's going to take a couple years.
Enti's better than Anatoly, who came up a couple weeks ago and was like, hire me as a director, I'm from Russia. Oh, okay, Anatoly's here.
Hello, Anatoly, good to see you.
Anatoly was at Comic-Con. Anyways, sorry. Derailed your interview.
Oh, I thought you just said thank you. It was nice seeing you. I thought
No.
I thought you ended it.
Oh, because you have to go?
No, because it was a big laugh.
I know. All right, Matt Dwyer. Hey! He's got to go to work. Let him go to work. Thank you, sir.
Matt Dwyer. Good to see you, Matt.
Hello.
Thank you, Enti.
Thank you, Enti.
So that episode that we were talking about, he sits down with Lucian Greaves, the head of the Satanic Temple, I'm probably butchering this, about this pink mass thing that took place on this grave. It's bound to be
hilarious.
Pretty interesting interview.
But I've not listened to his podcast. I've known Matt for a few years, not very well, but doing acid with Groucho and gay post-mortem grannies, this is good stuff.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, he's a better person than me. Why don't you marry him? All right. So we should. Feral Audio, Jeff. You know that Matt Dwyer is part of the Feral Audio Network.
I say what?
Yeah. Did you know that there's a lot of interesting content on the Feral Audio Network?
Well, I had no idea.
Did you know, for instance, that Aaron McGathy's This Feels Terrible has 3 live episodes available on the new Feral Audio store?
Shut your mouth.
Yeah. And if there was an edit point where we were going to play 30 seconds of one of those,
it would go a little something like this.
Let's bring out our guest. You know her from NBC's Community and a million other things, and being so cool and smart and adorable, Gillian Jacobs.
Just read your notes again.
It says
Gillian. You know her as Britta from NBC's Community. And then it says ... Gillian Jacobs ! Like, who are you talking to? Do you think you might not be able to make the show? And so she's like, Adam, go out and just be me. And make sure I put an exclamation point. Just give it a flourish.
And we're back.
All right. So moving on, let's see. What do we got to talk about?
Well, let's talk about people shoving tubes down you and you dressing up like a little lady in a muumuu.
Yeah, if you follow me on Instagram, you saw that I was wearing a little gown. I went and got an upper endoscopy. I'm 40 years old. I've had heartburn for about 3 years. I've been taking once I started taking Prilosec every day, everything's fine. But then I was watching a commercial for Prilosec with Larry the Cable Guy, and I didn't know where to put my eyes, so they went to the bottom of the screen where I saw the warnings at the bottom, and it said, like, if you're taking this for more than, I don't know, 6 weeks or something like that...
You might be a redneck. No, wait, that's Fox Radio, I'm sorry.
See a doctor. So I did. And the doctor did what a good doctor does. He sent me to a friend of his from medical school and charged me a referral fee. And I went to that guy, and he did what a good referral doctor does, which is go down a clipboard of questions that lead to him recommending a procedure that he makes money off of. And I signed off on it, and I went to this little clinic, and this is my first medical procedure ever. Unless you count like stitches, like for my brother beating my ass. Yeah, stuff.
You were under general anesthesia, were you not?
Yeah, like they put an IV in me. This was my first IV. I feel like I can still feel a little hole. It's very traumatic. I don't think I've ever met anyone that went through what I've been through. But I was like laying there in the bed, and then they put some extra stuff in your IV, and they go like, okay, you're gonna get a little sleepy. And it's like...
And then it's 4 days later.
It is incredible.
Just to interject for a second, the only time I've ever gone under was for my wisdom teeth. Like a year or two ago, had all four taken out. And apparently, there was a struggle. Because when I woke up, the office was empty. The doctor was gone. The nurse was there, and she looked fatigued. And I'm not joking. My belt was undone, and I had defense wounds on my arms. I had scratches on my forearms consistent with fending off a knife fight.
Can't you even be unconscious normal? Can't you? Can't you? Do you have to be special when you're knocked out, too?
I think I got raped. That's special.
Me.
At least he took pictures of my balls. Something happened.
Maybe x-rayed them.
Yeah.
See if there's a...
I don't know, man. But I woke up and they said, you're going to get a little slee. And then I didn't even hear the pee. Then I woke up and there was a crime had been committed.
Yeah, I honestly don't... No offense to dentists. If you're a dentist and you work hard and you care about people and you're wonderful, I'm not saying a statement about dentists. But I am saying that... Being a dentist, I don't think, is enough of a qualification to have that much power over another human being by default. I don't think it's... that's not cool. Yeah.
Well, he was an oral surgeon, you know. When they do that...
Aren't we all?
Touché.
I think it's pronounced tushy. No,
see, you're not. I knew you weren't.
Sarah
a
Silverman joke. I'm just saying, like, they put me under. They said you're gonna start to feel drowsy. I laid on my side, and they're like, you're gonna start to feel drowsy. And I just like, it's just like when you fall asleep. Like, you can never remember the moment you fell asleep. You remember being sleepy. You remember waking up. But I mean, so much more profound because while I was sleeping,
right.
They did like. Ridiculous things to my body. I mean, most notably shoving a camera down my esophagus for 25 minutes, and I have no recollection of it. They could have done butt stuff. They could have done anything. And I just woke up. I came to. You can see it on my Twitter feed. I wasn't doing anything. The lady who was putting me under. I think like a friend of hers wrote on season 4 of Community or something. So, she knew, we were having a conversation about it before she was putting me under. She's like, "Oh, my friend wrote on that show, so and so," and I said, "Who?" And she's like, "So and so. He was a writer on Community." I was like, "Season 4, perhaps." And she's like, "Yeah," and I'm like, "Yeah, I didn't work on that season." She said, "Oh, you're not working on the show anymore?" I said, "I worked on seasons 1 through 3. Now I'm coming back for season 5. And an anesthesiologist went, "That's weird." A woman who... That's how weird it is. A lady with no horse in that race is like, "That's weird." I'm like, no shit.
Yeah. I'm going to give you drugs and we're going to shove a hose down your mouth.
But I will say this, from what I know about television, that's very odd, that situation that you're in. But I woke up on a gurney and it was moving and there were like these ladies looking down at me like I was a baby in a crib. It must be adorable for them when people wake up and they're like smiling at me and I went like... Give me my phone. I'm a writer. And the anesthesiologist went, "Give him his phone. He's a writer." And they gave me my phone, and I tried as hard as I could to tweet like while I was coming to. And you can see the tweets. They're absolute, it's, like, Cyrillic. Like, yeah,
it's not your best work.
Yeah. Like, only Anatoly would be able to read them. It was not my finest work. And it wasn't like I was trying to say something profound. All I was trying to do was go, "I'm trying to tweet." Like, so it wasn't really worth it.
Why did you include "I'm a writer"? How did you think that would expedite you getting the... This goes above all of our heads.
I'm not... My conscious mind is not accountable to the things my unconscious mind says as soon as I come out of unconsciousness. I apparently define myself by what I do and felt like it entitled me to a phone.
I had a friend, because you have to get driven home from the hospital when you go under, so my friend drove me home from getting my teeth pulled, and I was still on the medication they had, but they said, like, in a couple hours it'll wear off. Go to your pharmacist, and here's the prescription for the stuff. So I said, I was really stoned. And I said, we have to go to my place because my insurance, like, pharmacy cards are upstairs. So I went and got all my insurance cards upstairs, and I go, oh, I should take this trash out, too. Trash is kind of sitting around for a while. So I took the trash out, and we get to the pharmacist. There's people waiting in line. I'm like, oh, man, it's starting to wear off. It really hurts. It really hurts. And I finally get up to the front, and I don't have my cards with me. And we had to go back and look for the cards. I'd thrown them out. I put them in the trash. I was I shouldn't have been allowed that much responsibility.
I shouldn't have been allowed to be in a... Even though you need a ride, it should be illegal to get a ride home with your girlfriend after the... I was a prick to Aaron. I was the protagonist of the Dead Zone or something, you know? I was just being mean to her because I had been to unconsciousness and back. I was like, Aaron, I don't know... I wanted to go get a drink. And Aaron, the villain in this story, had overheard the professional doctors tell me not to drink because I had anestheticness in my bloodstream. And so Aaron, the villain in this story, said, no, I'm not going to take you to the drawing room. And I was like, Aaron, I have been to Oblivion and back. You know, I shouldn't... For 25 minutes of today, I did not exist. And I came back into existence, and it shouldn't be... I shouldn't be regretting it.
I love my return to consciousness so much. I want to go straight to a bar.
I really was, like, on this trip where I was like, man, I touched nothingness, and I preferred it.
So you were willfully trying to go get back in there.
Kind of like I just wanted to be somewhere dark and cold and have an Amstel. Like I really wanted to just be alone more than anything because I really felt like I had never made it to 40 without ever being knocked out voluntarily by another's hand, I should say. I was gone for 20 minutes and then I was back and it was great to be back, but it wasn't bad to be gone either. It wasn't that big a deal.
Yeah, man, I'm right with you, man. I'm on the same wavelength, bro.
And I kind of felt like that was an important, healthy exercise. Like maybe at like 16-year-olds' birthdays, they should just have a guy like knock you out, just so you can be dead for a second. And well, that's an unfortunate linkage to the John Wayne Gacy thing from earlier. Your reactions are weird, and you're weird people. It doesn't matter.
The reaction was they were waiting for what the next statement was going to be.
No, I was saying it should be a rite of passage because 40 years old is too late to learn that it's okay to not exist.
Well, but people knock themselves out all kinds of ways, and they choke each other. And
yeah, but if I drank a fifth of bourbon and passed out, and you shoved a camera down my gut, I'd wake up and go, stop! Stop it!
Right.
Bruh! This is knocked out. Like, you lose, you know, and I think that the reality of that is a little bit important. It's not as profound as taking ayahuasca or anything. It's just like, but it's 40 is too late to learn that.
So you were out for 20 minutes. Do you recall any you know, visions?
No, that's the point. It's like if that's our biggest fear with death, right? Unless you really think that. I mean, my biggest fear with death is that your last thought will play out. You know, like you'll be like, "Oh shit, did I leave the iron on?" And then for perceived infinity, because your brain is like also in charge of how you perceive time. Like you'll forever like be wondering about your iron. But that might be also, was I a dick to my friends, or I owe Toby $50? Like they're just like forever. Like, but I think by and large, our biggest fear is nothingness, oblivion.
My biggest fear was, why was my belt off when I came to?
All right. I mean, I have no point. I'm just saying. As special as I was before this experience, Jeff, yeah. I am now like Galvatron to my former Megatron. I have bathed in the lava of... Thank you. Thank you, guys, in the back.
Are you okay? Are you, did you get a clean bill of health here? Or what's going on with you?
Well, he didn't. I mean, he said he found a polyp. They made it sound like that's like a thing that you find like a seashell on a beach. Like he was just like, I just grabbed it. Like it wasn't.
You,
right.
You have a coral reef growing inside.
Like everybody has a couple has a polyp here and there. He was like, I found a polyp. Like he found a penny. But he said, you know, there's inflammation. You're 40. You got heartburn. I didn't see anything weird. I didn't see Godzilla down there. I didn't see any. But they'll give a full report to my doctor. All right.
And now you said you're going to stop drinking tomorrow. You're going on a little juice cleanse.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not. Don't applaud stopping drinking. I'm going on a cleanse because I've gone way off my diet, and I think the best way to get back on that diet is to thank you, sir. We got to stop going to them for anything. All right. Our next guest is Anatoly. Get up here, Anatoly. Get that guy back up here.
I didn't know that I was a guest. So I want to get my $10 for this ticket back.
He wants his $10 back because he's a guest.
Now
he's
a guest of the show.
Yeah. Hey, wow. This is
a dangerous precedent to set, man.
No, if you come up on the show, you can have $10. Here, you know what? Keep the change. Perestroika, baby.
$20. A $20 bill.
Yeah.
How many rubles is that?
Well, because he was a guest last time, too.
It's like 600.
600 rubles?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
So, Anatoly, I got some follow-up questions. Having listened to the podcast that you were on, you came up. You said you came to UCLA to be a director.
Yep.
We said, do you have any favorite directors? No, you don't.
You did not ask it.
You don't.
I had a favorite director.
All right, who's your favorite director?
It's Wes Anderson.
Oh, Wes Anderson. Yeah. Okay, great. That's a good guy.
And no one clapping. Wes Anderson! Wes Anderson, guys!
Dan just shut them off. Dan just told them to stop.
Well, yeah, we're not on good terms, me and the audience.
I think they should just follow their hearts. You guys clap or boo whenever you feel like it. Fuck you! Show's over.
So then we did a scene from Mad Men, and yep. You directed us,
which I thought was pretty good.
Our scene work?
I thought our scene work was pretty tight.
Absolutely,
pretty tight.
But your direction was that I should dress differently, and that the script should be better.
This like what? I don't know.
And then you asked for a job.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He certainly has the beard to be a director.
Yeah.
And then you came to Comic-Con. You were in the Rick and Morty panel at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And you... What were you saying at the microphone?
At the beginning?
Yeah, when you got to the microphone, what were you saying at the Rick and Morty panel?
I was saying that I had Archer t-shirt. You know, Archer
you had an Archer, yeah. You had an Archer t-shirt
yeah.
on, and you were pointing at it.
Yeah.
But there was something, everyone thought that you were saying, God damn it. What does Archer t-shirt sound like?
Like Machu Picchu. Yeah.
Oh, everyone was saying, is he saying Machu Picchu? I was pointing at his Archer t-shirt. It's not really a story as much as it is just a slice of life. Yeah, it's appropriate that you like Wes Anderson because you're kind of a Wes Anderson character at this point. Like you're this. So you're going to UCLA. You're gonna make. But you want to direct TV, not movies, right?
I want to direct both.
Okay, like, both. Yeah. Fine. All right. How can we turn Anatoly into a thing that makes people clap?
Thank you, Anatoly.
All right. Thank you, Anatoly.
Hey, he's fucking. He's $20 in the black right now, man.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, $20.
Anatoly, what are you gonna do with all that money?
I will eat.
He will eat.
I like the name Anatoly. I wish I'm gonna name my son Anatoly.
You know, I used to be like when in high school, I didn't like reading all that much because I hated being told what to do. But then I got Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky by this young teacher when I was a senior. And that was the first book I really fell in love with. And I became obsessed with Dostoevsky and then Tolstoy and Chekhov. And I became this big Russophile. And when I went to USC, I studied, I took all these classes in Russian literature. I went back and read some of the stuff I wrote. I was smart back then. I don't know shit anymore. So hearing the name like Anatoly makes me think of it's War and Peace. It's an Anatolian War and Peace, isn't it? Yeah? Yeah? Never mind. It's a huge book. It's got to be like four.
Yeah.
All right. It makes me miss the days when I was smart. Yeah, I'm not saying I'm dumb. I'm saying like when you're in college, your brain is just like you're so active.
No, it is true. If you're under 30, like you don't know, man. Use it for something. I mean, you just use it to have fun or make stuff. You don't have to use it to like pick at anything.
But yeah, you had to work. So I worked so fucking hard in college. I never want to work that hard again. I think that's what it was. Like I worked and I got my A's and I just got out of there. Like I don't ever want that brain lock. So you're a writer. You go through. You force yourself into that procrastination fear. That brain freeze of I'm out of ideas, you hit those walls, things like that. Like I couldn't put myself through that.
Yeah. I'm multitasking.
Then I'll ask you a question while you thumb through your phone, your giant phone.
All right. Ask me a question.
How big is your phone? how's the writing coming on season 5?
You know, it's on Friday they're applauding.
They didn't even know the answer yet.
Anticipation. The new writers are coming along very nicely. We on Friday, like the kind of like a bunch of popcorn kernels popped at the same time. We kind of closed out Friday, like realizing that we had a handle on several great episodes all at once.
Yeah, we rode down on a party bus to Comic-Con together. I got to meet plenty of them, not all of them probably, but a lot of them.
We're doing, as I've announced, because you have to know this before, well, in advance, we're doing an animated episode this year. And and I will say, the animated episode we're doing this year, even for this ridiculous show that we've been doing in all of its unmarketability, our approach to doing the animated episode this season is something that could definitely only be done in season 5 of Community. Meaning that it's like even in season 3 of Community, people would have been like, okay, come on, knock it off. But now they can't. They can't. And so it's. But I don't mean that it's just weird for weird's sake. I quite the opposite. I mean it's like very profound. Like in a way that makes it not. You know, it's like this is a sitcom. But it will also be incredibly funny. It's going to be a fucking masterpiece if I do say so myself. Everything sounds horrible when it's followed by applause like that.
Did you write this profound episode after you got knocked out and saw the other side?
No, I didn't, but I have all new angles on it now that I did. But no, I mean, it's the thing that I'm most proud of is that I was, you know, I this was after we kind of like started breaking up the rooms and stuff, and these writers, like, it's the thing that makes me so much happier than me staring at a whiteboard and coming up with something is when I leave a room for 2 hours and come back and people have landed on something. We just get some brilliant minds in there that are really, really, really respectful of the medium and have come up with some incredible shit. Dino's gonna, his name will be on the cover sheet. Dino's gonna write the animated episode. But I mean, we'll all be writing it together as all the
awesome
episodes. But it's gonna be a goodie. I feel comfortable guaranteeing
that. Can you see how many episodes in that will appear?
Actually, no, because we're gonna make it standalone. It'll be production code 513 for you community production code heads, I think you're called. Freak out when you see the numbers are swapped and stuff. Any numbers you see swapped are, it's for a reason. It's because the directors needed a certain schedule and stuff like that. We're giving the animated episode the last production code so that we can put it in. It's going to stand alone, kind of. So, anyways, that's enough of that business. what else was there? Went to Comic-Con, had a weird stomach ache in front of that panel, that amazing panel, 6,500 people. I felt something I never felt before, which is like this weird, like normally being in front of 6,500 people would be the most relaxing thing in the world for me. That's my inverted personality. I only know I exist when people are listening to me talk. But I had this, I came up, I just had this swell of like just gastrointestinal like tension. I felt like the upper half of my stomach had done 1,000 sit-ups. And I came off stage and explained that to Dino, and he said, "Yeah, it's like you got to watch what you say now." Like that's that, you know, that's what happens.
Oh, really? That you think that was just like?
Yeah, because I was so looking for so forward to the Rick and Morty panel, but now this community thing. It's I'm sure it's all my fault. I'm not complaining about any of it, but this is just the phenomenon that's happened. Like, there's so much more wrong I can do than right by talking, and it's just like 6,500 people, and I'm just like. Take one person that you could make cry by saying the wrong combination of words, whether that person is a Jeff Annie shipper or a person who served proudly in our nation's armed services, or a double amputee, or a person that worked really hard on season 4, or a victim of non-consensual sex in the summer of 98, or someone that worked for TV Guide. Who really, really, really wants me to be an asshole? There's so many. I go 6,500 people, 6,500 chances to fuck up, to say the wrong thing, and I think I just my brain went, okay, well you can't deal with that, so I just pushed it all down into my little Tim Tums.
Tim Tums.
That's where the cake and the vodka goes. That's not for dealing.
But you don't feel that restriction in here, but this podcast goes out to a lot more than 6,500 people.
Well, I mean, walking off that stage, I was like, fuck this. Like, I refuse to live my life feeling that way. Fuck you in the teeth. Forever.
Right,
if you ever,
right in the teeth.
If you would ever have anyone feel that way, go fuck you a million times in the big fat face. Just fuck you for wanting people to feel bad. I've never done anything to hurt anybody. I've never said anything that I wanted to, you know, make people feel pain. I just can't do it. I'd rather kill myself. I'll never feel that way again. It's a horrible experience. Anyways, okay, so
worse than being in San Diego itself. That town is a fucking bummer. I'm talking about downtown San Diego. Around San Diego is quite lovely.
Can you even call it a downtown?
Yeah. It's, I don't know, man. People said, well, there's too many people there. It wasn't the Comic-Con's fault. It wasn't the people's fault that were there. It's just you can't get a good bite to eat.
No, I've been there during non-Comic-Con. It's not, you got your San Franciscos, you got your Portlands, you got your New Yorks, your LAs, your Asheville, North Carolinas. Hipster towns. San Diego is not a hipster town.
I don't know. There's just a neutral setting of hostility there. Like, and it's not because there's military bases. The military people you meet in there are quite nice and friendly and polite and cool.
Yeah, but the equipment the military is using experimentally to enrage the populace. You're familiar with HAARP.
I don't like it. I got thrown out of a bar. Wasn't doing anything. I sassafrased the bouncer. I was standing kind of in the doorway. I was not standing in the door jam. I was 2.5 feet back and a foot over to the side. So three people could have walked abreast, like, through that doorway and not bumped into me. And a guy just came in. I was the only guy in a suit and kind of a divey bar. And this guy, they make all the bouncers there wear shirts that say security on them. And they all have ear monitors, and it's a little much. And they card you just like Checkpoint Charlie. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah. Ostensibly, they're there for Comic-Con because, you know, it's crowd control and stuff, and that's cool. But there was a guy dressed as the Crow at the bar who may dress like the Crow every day and was certainly acting like a guy who dresses like, who's like, oh, I get to dress like the Crow. And he was, like, breaking shit, and, like, nobody was sassafrassing him.
I was standing there in a suit, and I'd had some drinks, but I wasn't bothering anybody. I was kind of just standing there. And the guy looks like, bro, you can't stand there. I'm like, and I look down, and, like, there's a little concrete square of, like, kind of where the incline of the doorway comes in, you know, where they had to kind of pave that little way up. And I was, like, right on the edge of that. And so I just kind of semi-sarcastically tiptoed just out of it. And he goes, keep moving, bro. I'm like, you tell me, I'm going to keep tiptoeing, and you tell me when to stop. He's like, don't sass me, bro. Don't sass me. I'm like, look, not only would I never sass you, sir. I have so much respect for you and what you do, what you're doing right now. I just want to be the world's best customer at this bar, and I want to know all the rules. I want to know everything. So I don't want to get this one wrong. And I go, is this okay? And he's like, he just gave me the eyeball. And then an hour later, I'm in the back, leaning up against like a stack of beer boxes, texting my girlfriend, not doing anything. Bro, you're wobbling. You got to go.
Like he took him an hour to get a head of steam or a couple of shots.
A drone attack. Yeah, he just got fucking like he was separated from the pack.
Yeah, and then the things kind of politeness for, on my end kind of went out the window at that point.
Yeah, I've seen you more sober, but I've seen you a lot drunker, and everyone in that bar was also drunker. Like I mean,
he goes, you weren't doing anything wrong. He goes, you're wobbling. I go, I'm not wobbling. You can't even talk right now. You're slurring, bro. I'm not. Yeah, you see, you're slurring. I go, I was like, you're a cunt. Can you read me? Big buddy, am I coming in? And then right when you walked over, what's going on? Well, this guy's a cunt. And who's this guy? This guy's a cunt too. I don't know. There's two guys. And one, this guy's a coward because he did this. He cocked his fist at me and he didn't do anything. So cunt, coward, cunt. Look, don't throw me out of your bar.
Yeah. Yeah, the people that go into that line of work. All right. I mean, well, if you are a cool bouncer, and I know there must be a lot of them because there's a lot of cool
they
places.
They generally
to drink.
Are. They don't work in San Diego, though.
Yeah, yeah. Like, please, thank you.
That's not true. I met a very nice bouncer who had the full thing, and he was quite helpful and nice, but he just looks like, I don't know, San Diego. Too many sideways or backwards baseball hats on white dudes with Crocs or flip flops on. San Diego may officially get the Jeff Davis patented thumbs down and fart sound.
That means a lot to people. It does.
What?
I'm not being sarcastic.
The thumbs down and fart sound.
Thumbs down from Jeff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Jeff.
I rarely do it. It's not the whole. San Diego's a giant county and it's a big city.
There's like, whales that just got the thumbs down. Like, you didn't even.
Don't get me started on Blackfish, man. I just saw that yesterday. You guys want to get bummed out?
Watch. How was it?
It's a bummer. Yeah. You know about this movie?
No.
It's a documentary about.
Is it like The Cove or something?
No, it's well, kind of. It's The Concrete Pool. It's about the it's about SeaWorld's treatment of orcas and the cover ups of the people that die training them there.
Wait, and people die?
Yeah, they die. And then it's just an absolute like PR just thing of like because one whale. I don't want to spoil it for everybody, but there is one whale that ate a lady.
And it's not much of a spoiler.
Yeah, and it's not because it's in the news and stuff like that. But what I did not know is this whale's backstory is pretty fascinating. It's, and this whale has a backstory.
Apparently, it once walked on land. and looked much like a brontosaurus. All right, well, let's bring up the rest of our little rascals and get their two cents on everything that's happened tonight. Kumail Nanjiani. We missed you. Conan O'Brien's Kumail Nanjiani.
It's been a while. You know what? Can I say? Kind of fuck San Diego.
Would you fuck it right in the teeth?
Would you fuck it with a side of beef?
Would you fuck it on a bagel?
I would fuck it till it queefed.
Nice. I like your meter.
Yeah.
A, B, C, B.
That was like a kind of a haiku we had.
I was there. I was at Comic-Con. I went to see. I didn't run into you. But so, you know, people are, it's like super packed. So I was with my wife and we were walking side by side. And it's like just a ton of people around. And Emily looked at me and she's like, there's a guy with his crotch on my butt right now, right behind me. So I looked back to sort of see, because expecting like a huge crowd. It was just one guy. It was me, Emily, and then just one guy, nobody else around, just like a butt backpack on, like, just attached to her. Like, the rules of society kind of don't apply at Comic-Con.
It, the weird thing that's starting to happen now is that, because I'm old. I was there in the 90s when I was signing comic books. There was a Marvel Center. There were video game consoles being sold there. Yeah. But we nerds were allowed to sit on the floor of hallways with our big bags of shit that we bought. At our nerd mecca and go through shit. And then there was a tipping point that got crossed, I don't know, let's say 6 years ago, I have no idea. Whenever, I mean, there was just a point where it was like, this movie has nothing to do with comic books, but it's premiering here anywhere. But I realized community is part of the problem. I like returned as, you know, to this like Sundance of things. But so like now you just get cattle prodded if you're a nerd and you try to sit down anywhere. They're like, keep it moving. And it's like,
I really hate the booth babes thing. Like, that is so fucking gross to me. All those like I feel horrible for them too, because they're like, this is the, you know, 3 days of the year where they definitely yeah. have work. But if you go day three, their eyes are so sad.
But there's also now, it's like the, it's almost like it's the worst of all worlds, because it was Nerd Mecca, but now it's Nerd Sundance, and now because it's Nerd Sundance, it's a form of Sundance. So now there's this douchey component coming in.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I was in a pizza parlor, and there were two girls who were in costume, and they didn't know each other, but some guys wanted pictures with them. And then another guy, like with a backwards baseball cap and some Crocs and some flip flops and some floop floops, who's sitting in the pizza parlor, he started yelling at, he's like, "Make out! Make out!" And I was like, "Oh, well, whatever. San Diego meets Comic Con." He had laminates on. He was a fucking Comic Con guy. He was just there to see, you know, fucking Ben Affleck 3 or whatever's premiering there, you know?
Already at Ben Affleck 3?
Yeah.
It's, you know what? We are, because we had Ben Affleck 1 was like Mallrats and stuff. Then Ben Affleck 2 was Goodwill Hunting. Right. And now Argo is Ben Affleck 3.
This is Ben Affleck 3D. Well, now he's directing and he's got a beard. Okay. I forgot to bring out the list of our little rascals. We got to get Darla and Spanky out here. Aaron McGathy. Spencer Crittenden, our Dungeon Master. Aaron, you have to stand back in the booth and listen to me talk for an hour? What, anything you want to feedback on?
I'm from San Diego. And I couldn't agree more.
It is like a douchey, like it's a, Comic-Con is very different than what that town's vibe is generally.
Yeah, I mean, like as a high schooler there who felt like an outcast, being really hot and, I mean, the problem is that it's so beautiful in San Diego that there's no real like art or theater scene that's supported as much as it should be, because everyone's like, let's just jet ski. And it's a big retirement community. Also, it's so hot there that if you're a fat 15-year-old and you're wearing sweatshirts, everyone notices. And you can't really fly under the radar. Being unique is not valued in San Diego. But shout out to the two people I still talk to there.
The guy in the Joker outfit.
Wait, sweetie.
And Rey Mysterio.
Sorry?
Rey Mysterio, he talked to Tiffany. Yeah. That's one
night. I mean, San Diego obviously has like cool parts to it, but it like there is a big value put on conformity and being able to wear a midriff.
Seafood.
Backwards.
There's a big jock culture there, and I think it is due in part to the military bases, which is fine. Like I come from a military family, and I'm not saying that the military is bad or anything, but there is like there's a big like macho.
The whole level thing of douchebaggery that I have noticed down there. My brother went to college there, so I was down there a lot, and I used to go down there for lots of reasons and stuff. You don't see fights in bars in Los Angeles, almost never. I don't know what that's about. If it's
because they wanted to protect their face. That's their livelihood.
even in dodgy bars where people are already beat up, like I think there's a level of like he might shoot me, like I'll be looking over my shoulder for the rest of my life if I do that. But in San Diego, people fight in bars. Like it's just a weird tension and a hostility that I cannot get on board with.
Yeah. By the way, can I say something? This is changing the subject. Is that when you woke up? I've heard that. Anesthesia, that when you wake up, different parts of your brain wakes up at different times. And so the part that is more aggressive wakes up before the part that sort of controls that.
So the part
sounds
that
accurate.
Where I was like, give me my phone. I'm a writer.
Yeah, so that was just brain chemistry, man. That's not on you.
All right.
I punched my mom after I came out of...
You punched your mom?
I was 12. No, don't boo that.
Hear you don't the know his mom.
You haven't met her.
Jeff,
I boo,
you can't
I boo.
Say anything.
Jeff, look what time it is.
I have to be honest. I looked over a minute ago. It was 9:10. Doesn't count.
Whoever booed you punching your mom, I have to boo them. Boo.
Yeah, I apologize afterwards. I don't remember doing it.
Also, obviously, if you can tell people that you punched your mom, you're not like going, hey, it's something you should cheer.
Yeah, I'm being revealing. And
it
you
might
guys
have been
are...
an ironic boo. I think people are having fun with it.
Well, now I boo your...
It's a very vocal audience we were commenting.
Well, I've engaged them. They can sense in me. They can sense what happened to me at Comic-Con, and they can sense what happened to me in Oblivion.
You know what? I know exactly what you feel. It feels like when you get... I was like 12 when I had surgery, and I had like ear problems my whole life, and I would get these horrible earaches, and it was like, when you're old enough, you'll have surgery. When you're old enough, you'll have surgery. And when I was 12, I was old enough, and it was planned for months, and I was there waiting, and the doctors came in scrubs, and they were like, hey, do you want to go to the circus? And I was like, fuck you. I'm not an idiot. But I went in and they strapped me down and I fought and they put the mask on my face and they were like, blow, there'll be a balloon. I'm too old at this point to give a shit about a balloon. And I remember blowing as hard as I can and being like, there's no balloon! I'm like screaming it. But it feels like such a violation that they can put you out that hard. When I woke up, I was like angry that they have the ability to do that to me. Like, I have favorite ice cream flavors and shit, and you took it all away.
Well, to be clear, I didn't feel that way at all. I was so grateful for Western medicine and all that it...
You love balloons.
I didn't want... They said, you're going to start to feel drowsy, and I was so grateful. I 3 seconds, and then blink, and then... I heard like a beep, beep, and it felt like I could hear beeping for a while, and then to wake up in a crib pushed by ladies smiling and going like...
Did I die and go to heaven?
I had a camera down my throat, and I didn't know. I was very grateful.
No, I liked that I was out, but I just was a little... Like, I had all my wisdom teeth out last year, and I was like, don't put me under.
In one go?
In a couple goes, couple different goes.
You opted to be awake?
Well, I hadn't gone to the dentist in like 15 years, and I was at a burger place, and it said, get the buffalo burger if the Native Americans only ate buffalo, and if they had proper dental care, they would have lived to be 120 or something. So I was like, shit, I gotta, you know.
What restaurant was this?
It's called the Fix Burger. So I went to the dentist, and I was like, hey, it's just a regular checkout. And she was like, emergency dental surgery right now. Your mouth is a cave of nightmares. I knew it was going to be bad because she was like, do you have any symptoms? And I said, if I eat ice cream on the left side of my mouth, my spine hurts.
You might be a redneck.
So I had months of surgery for that, and I didn't want to go under because that time when I was 12, it felt like a violation.
But that's very interesting to me. Yeah. I mean, there's a fork in the road there. The fact that you felt, I want to be out because I don't want any of it to be happening.
Yeah,
but you're like.
I didn't want to be there for it, but I didn't want to get put under. And then while it's happening, I regretted it because they were playing 13 going on 30 the whole time. And I was like, this dental surgery is the second worst thing I'm going through right now.
Spencer, have you ever been knocked out?
I'm on stage 2. That's not a complaint. That's not a complaint. That's just a clarification for our podcast listeners.
Yeah.
Because they heard an applause.
Spencer has... Yeah, for those of you that have never been to or seen a picture of us, Spencer's at the kids' table over on the side.
Yeah, no, that wasn't a complaint. I promise. I'm not... I'm fine. I've been surgered before.
You've been surgered?
Yeah.
What was it?
Is that how you conjugate that?
Why not? Who cares?
You can get barbered,
Do
I guess.
You know what I said?
It's a sewing term.
It just, I mean, it made sense, right?
Yeah.
That's all that counts. That's the beautiful thing about the English language. What the fuck?
Spencer and Jeff have been fighting all day, just so you guys know.
Yeah, no. I've had all my wisdom teeth out. That was crazy. I've had Okay, everybody in the audience has to be honest. Does anyone know what a pilonidal cyst is?
You? Is it in your butt?
Yeah, yeah. It's not fun, but it's also not terrible. But I had one of those dealt with.
It's a cyst up your butt?
That's interesting because I would think most things to do with your butt would either be great or terrible.
Yeah.
And this is like
most,
a...
I'd say it's the most, you know, ambivalent thing you could do with your butt.
You could take it or leave it.
Yeah, well, that's the weird thing about it, because you could, like, depending on, you know, the intensity, sometimes it's better to not have it operated on, and sometimes it's better to have it operated on.
What is it? It's a cyst in your butthole?
It's like you know, if you have an ingrown hair and it kind of becomes infected, and then if you squeeze it, the hair comes out, and there's a tiny little bit of pus? Yeah. It's like that, in that it develops this kind of channel from your hair follicle that gets infected.
In your butt?
Yeah.
The whole thing is in your butt.
Well, it's not in your butt. It's in the butt crack. Like
So not the hole.
Yeah, no, above it. Like
it's
lower
in the
back.
It's in the runway.
Lower back. Depends on, you know, which
My
direction
confusion
your approach
is, though, why would they bother to call it a special kind of cyst? When it's just that's a
well, a cyst implies it's like, you know, in my mind it's like kind of like a growth, like a tumorous growth, but it's more like just like a little opening, like a little.
Is the what was the word you said before cysts?
Pilonidal. No, go away.
Spencer's dad is.
Hold on. Let me explain this. My dad also had to deal with this. That's all he's going to contribute.
Spencer's dad is just has just.
We
has
could
just
we kinda, could stop there.
Spencer's dad just kind of materializing
right? The stage.
See, he's had a couple. There you go.
That was.
So much to talk about.
Thank you, Mr. Crittenden.
My mom came over to my house today to drop off some T-shirts.
All right.
But she stayed there.
Spencer.
I can't get her out of the chimney. No, she left eventually. Well, I'm ornery about my parents.
Well, they can be a drag at your age, you know? You want some elbow room.
It's literally...
Yeah,
you saw me elbowing him.
Well, you moved out of your parents' home at 23, 24 years old.
Yeah,
and so what's the problem now? Are they happy you're gone? Sad you're gone?
I just don't, you know, communicate with them like most people communicate with their parents. So you know, I'm like, let's just do it that way, and that's how I.
And
do
they're
it.
Going through maybe a little bit of like.
Well, yeah, because I'm great.
Right.
Yeah, see, I would guess without knowing that you probably brought some structure and order possibly to the household, maybe, right?
I'd like to think so.
Yeah.
Hey, before we move, do you want to finish telling us about the...
Yeah,
well, it just happened and, you know, you could get it cut out.
Does the word that you said before the word cyst, does that word mean in the butt crack?
No, it's really gross. It means nest of hair. It okay, doesn't. It's not an accurate depiction.
So the fact that it was in your butt crack has nothing to. That's just incidental, right?
No, well,
you could get one of these on your chest. You could get one on your arm.
Although I do call my asshole a nest of hair,
a pilonitis.
The word "nest" implies that there's creatures dwelling.
That somebody made
it's
it.
Gross, but I know what it means, so I'm not just going to be like, I don't know what it means. So,
have you guys seen the new CW show Nest of Hair?
It's about San Diego.
But I'm still. I mean, no. I want to know what does that word mean in the butt crack, or does it?
No, it means nest of hair.
Is it something that only happens in the butt crack?
Yeah, because that's where there's friction.
That's
and
why there's a nest
when
of
you're
hair.
Sitting, you know, when you're sitting, that's where sometimes sweat collects.
Right.
And if you're in a car or a vehicle, you know, there's agitation when you're bouncing in the car, and that's why a lot of GIs get it, and it's known as Jeep butt.
Sometimes
Jeep butt.
Yeah.
That's
cute. It's a lot less disgusting than pilonidal cysts.
Sometimes you'll see a family of finches fly out of your pants.
Yeah.
I wonder
they
if
come
it's
and go.
Jeep butt.
Could you have one of those and then it goes away and then it comes back or something like that?
Yeah, it's like a pimple in that, like, you know, it just, it'll get bigger and then it'll pop and then it'll go away, or sometimes in rare cases it could get infected like a pimple. You know, like an opening in the skin.
And this is something you had to get surgered.
Well, they recommended it and we did it, but you don't need to. Like, it kind of depends. It's a case-by-case basis. But essentially, what they do is way worse, because it's like this tiny hole in your skin on your butt, and what they do is they cut out like a wedge of it. It's like, you know, when you transplant a plant where you just take a huge scoop of earth out from around it.
So you have a slightly bigger butt than you used to?
No, because they seal it back together, and they literally use like glue, like this crazy adhesive glue stuff, and they glue it back
all
together.
All this feels like you just went to a weird frat party.
I mean, arguably. It isn't doctoring fraternity?
Is that your mom?
I'm sure.
A gal from the audience, it is a woman, right? Somebody's boasting that her nest of hair Jeep butt pimple was worse than yours.
Well, I don't doubt that.
So they scoop. So they scoop out a hole and then they.
Dan, are you so interested in this because you want together. To be knocked out again? Are you looking for? You're wondering if you have a nest of hair.
Yeah. Well, I am a nest of hair. That's okay. All right. Well. So you've been knocked out while they did that.
Yeah.
Did you find it to be a profound experience?
No. It's a lot like... I don't dream very often. I mean, everyone's going to be all like, everybody dreams. I don't really, dream, but...
Me neither. I don't dream that much at all.
Yeah, like, it's not like it never happens, but,
it's because you guys are living your dreams when you're awake.
Oh, Dan.
No, I'm not even trying to be weird.
Well, you succeeded.
Great. Yeah.
I don't know. That's probably why. What? That doesn't make it... Whatever.
What I'm saying is... I
get what you're saying.
I think when you're dreaming, your brain's like getting off excess energy, and I feel like if you're already using that when you're awake, maybe there's not as much to give off when you're asleep.
Well, I like that. I like that a lot more than I thought it meant, what it meant initially.
Sure. So your brain is dead.
Yeah. Well, just when you're asleep.
Yeah.
Because it's so awake when you're awake. That's what he's saying.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
I dreamt that was Batman a couple nights ago.
Woo! Now, if we know your history of psychic stuff,
yeah.
Does that mean that's going to happen?
Wait, but there was a crime. There was a crime that was committed.
Uh-oh. Fucking tell us, dude.
You're just having an espresso with an Italian cafe.
Yeah, we don't need you to sleep on another 9/11 here.
Thing was, I was Batman, and I was... wrongly convicted of like accused of a crime that I didn't commit, like by a supervillain maybe, and this is definitely I had watched RoboCop the night before, so I think like, I think this is a RoboCop dream. But then I had to hide and dress like a regular person and go through an airport, and I got held by security at an airport. So let's hope the airport. Oh, this was days ago, so we're all in the clear.
Okay,
great. A couple days ago.
Can I plug something?
Yeah, is it Spencer's nest of hair?
Is that like a butt plug sort of play on words
thing?
Yeah,
I've had a few.
Do people plug? That's okay, right?
Yeah, go ahead. Plug.
I had a special come out on Comedy Central. You should. It's called Beta Male. Go to CC. If you go to ccdirect.comedycentral.com, it's $5. That's the cheapest way to get it. Or you could torrent it. I don't care. I don't really get that money.
The people in back love torrenting. That makes sense. The people who got here later. They know the ropes.
And so this was a big deal for me when it was airing, and I told my parents to watch it. And the next day I got a text from my parents. This is sort of shows what my relationship with them is like. It just said... saw your program.
I think we may be brother and sister.
Yeah, is it like that?
Does this go back to the punch that happened when you were 12?
Well, yeah, maybe.
So you woke up, you socked your mom, and then was there a melee? Did she like fire back? Was there a scuffle?
I think she's still firing back.
Was there any? Did you follow up? Did you?
No,
back.
I didn't talk to
with like an
them.
Uppercut?
No.
With after saw your program.
Yeah, that was her punching back. I didn't talk to them for a week, and then I talked to them today, and it wasn't brought up. When I, as a comedian, like, doing Letterman is like the biggest thing you can do, and I was like, all right, I finally do something that they know what Letterman is, I do other shit. They don't know very much about pop culture, but they know Letterman. So I did Letterman, and I talked to them on the phone, and they were like, hey, we saw you on Letterman. And then just told some story about my aunt. I was like, so I don't know what's happening.
What could you say to them that would make them very proud, like in a sentence?
I'm Muslim.
All right, Spencer, do you want to dispense the character sheets and get this
D&D session underway?
Sure, why not?
Also, while he does that, it's probably a good time to plug the fact that we're finally getting that stuff underway. We're recording. It's what's called Harmon Quest right now. As we're recording this D&D thing that we've been alluding to forever. Spencer's dungeon mastering. We're playing D&D and recording the audio in front of a live audience, just as we do here. Only we're doing it on a little bit of a budget with some of our favorite comedic cameo people at the Silent Movie Theater, in combination with screenings of like crazy fantasy themed movies. And then we're gonna take the audio from the role playing sessions, give it to my studio Starburns, and they're going to stop motion animate the combat and stuff. It's going to be an awesome. So if you want to be part of that, check online. It's called Harmon Quest. It's at CineFamily. It's being done in conjunction with CineFamily. That's why we're doing the fantasy themed movies and stuff. When's the first one coming up?
That's this coming Saturday.
Right.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Is there money? Like, does it cost money to get in? Yes. How much does it cost to get in?
$80.
$14. That's a bargain.
But if you're Anatoly, you make 38.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that. I've been on like 60 episodes. No, but yeah, www.cinefamily.org. That's www.cinefamily.org.
You're doing Excalibur, right?
I think the first one might be Excalibur.
Yeah.
Oh, the first film?
The first film is Excalibur, and the first guest is...
Adam Sandler is going to be there.
No shit.
Now you have to get Adam Sandler.
The first night's guests are Blake Anderson from Workaholics and Kumail Nanjiani.
Kumail Nanjiani.
From Conan O'Brien.
All right, we plugged that. Spencer, shall we get underway here?
Sure.
Dan, if you pass the sheets down, I will give Spencer his theme music and we can get this rolling.
Yeah. Last time. Our heroes were on the road to Fornheim to end their fight with Admiral Darkstar. As they traveled north, they went up into the mountains towards Fornheim, the frozen city. Yurch had suggested they stop there to ask for an army, or maybe horses, or some form of other style aid from the city. And after many days, there they trekked, high up mountains and up onto a specific mountain range in particular. But there, they encountered a deadly blizzard. Blizzard, what the fuck? But through the driving snow and ice, they could see the white walls of the frozen fortress. There was a bridge. Quark was suspicious, but Sharpie pushed on. They started to cross the bridge. They did not finish crossing the bridge. From afar, the city fired cannons and skeletons landed in the ice. Sharpie tried to reason, but Quark leapt into action, tackling one of them, and the gang was fighting. The skeletons attacked with wicked blows. Mulrain understood the beast's rage and looked into its dead eyes in empathy. Sharpie grasped one of the skeletons with a shocking grasp, surging electrical energy through its brittle bones, causing it to cause fire and fall on the floor. Two skeletons remained. What would they do? Combat is happening now.
All right, two skeletons left.
Yeah. All right.
Seems easy.
Yeah, we're on an icy bridge.
Who's up first, Spencer?
Quark, you were wrestling with one of them. You're currently wrestling him, and you're trying to throw him off the bridge.
Okay, I just try to grapple him and like just throw him off the side.
Yeah. All right, that happens.
Woohoo! Nice.
Grappling with the skeleton, you get the upper hand. Did you just drop your... That's awesome. Sorry. You get the upper hand. You drop to the floor and then throw him over your shoulder, and he goes sailing off the white edge of the icy bridge into the abyss.
I yelled, "Suck it!"
One skeleton remains.
Whose turn is it?
That'd be yours.
Okay. How close are we to the skeletons?
You're about 25 feet off. It's kind of engaged with Mulrain right now and Sharpie. but you're a bit off.
I'm a bit off?
Yeah.
All right. Well,
he was always there.
Okay.
Everybody shut up.
I do, I mean, I take my poison dagger. Will that work?
Take that poison dagger through my heart. Oh, the poison won't, but the dagger will.
Huh?
Poison doesn't work on undead.
Well, the dagger does.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah. Definitely.
Cool. So I sneak attack the guy.
Okay.
And just go to town.
Going to town on the guy with a sneak attack. You strike directly between his shoulder blades, dealing 15 damage.
I give Krista Berg a little chit, do you call it? Like from AA. That's one day of not tying a rope around your dagger when you throw it.
You know what? I thought about it a lot.
I could see, but
it's
you,
been the toughest day of my life.
Did you call it a chit?
Yeah, you get those chip. Little
chip. Chip with
a
P.
Chip.
Yeah. Like chit is a thing, too.
Is it?
Yeah.
I don't know. Google
what?
It.
Yeah.
What?
It's in your butt.
I believe you guys.
Is it almost dead?
You don't know. It is undead.
It's a lot. But it's...
What is it doing right now?
It's being stabbed. There's a knife in it.
Okay.
It's not, like, responding.
How is it reacting?
It's not like a person that feels pain. It's more like a skeleton.
You're not like a person.
It's all right.
That's
okay.
You know, the skeletons are me. We went over this.
Okay.
That's a throwback.
Who's next?
That's Moraine's turn.
All right. So I have no idea how the skeleton's reacting. So I'm going to just grapple. I'm going to grapple with the skeleton. I'm going to make eye contact with him, and I'll say, "Thank you for your sacrifice." And I try to throw him off the bridge.
Okay.
Don't look at me, Dan.
I just want to know, like, what... What you wanted to know how the skeleton was reacting before you did that? Like, what would you have done?
Well, I mean, if Camille did that and he was like, "All right, guys, come on, let's cool it." Then
oh,
I
okay.
Would...
You just wanted to make sure the monster wasn't... Okay, all right.
All right.
That's cool. The monster did not
or
say...
Or if he was on the ground or if he was flying around. I mean, Spencer's much smarter and better than I am.
No, that makes sense now that you explained it, but yeah.
Yeah. Can I also do a pink mass on it to make it gay in the afterlife?
Does it... Do they have to be dead for that? No, I mean for the pink mass.
I think you could do it to some
Satanist ritualism.
I think you could do it to someone who's alive, right?
Well, I mean, couldn't they just be like, "I'm gonna be gay"?
Yeah.
And then they wouldn't need this whole satanic ritual.
Who, the Satanists? What are you talking about?
The pink mass.
What is a pink mass?
No, they were doing a sort of protest on the grave of this lady,
making
her gay in the afterlife.
Anyway.
It happened in the show earlier on.
That doesn't happen in Dungeons & Dragons.
Didn't make the connection.
It fails.
So he's still straight?
Still straight.
Okay.
Fuck.
What happened with my grappling?
Yeah, okay, so you manage to wrestle it, and you're trying to flip it over, you know, off the edge, but you just kind of, you guys go down to the floor, and you're just kind of grappling with each other, wrestling style.
So it didn't...
It didn't. She didn't have enough force to send it over the edge.
Okay.
But, you know, it's down. It's there.
But okay. It's on me.
You're on it also.
Definitely still straight.
It's a mutual kerfuffle.
Does he have a boner? You.
That's still
I know. That was my joke that he was a skeleton. Yeah. Someone in the audience says he's a skeleton. Yeah. I'm sorry. I apologize. So I'm on him. It's not working, though.
Yeah. He doesn't have a boner.
Okay.
Just to clarify.
So it's to Sharpie.
Putting it in Sharpie.
Quark actually does have a boner. He gets a battle boner sometimes.
Just to clarify.
I've got a battle boner.
Just like an anger boner?
It's just only when I'm in battle.
Or when you want to fuck a horse or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Saddle battle.
Putting it at Sharpie.
Saddle boner?
Saddle boner.
All right. I can't use shrink item on a skeleton. That's only an item, right?
That's correct.
And I do I have any shocking grasps left?
Yeah. On your trek, you gain back all your spells, and you've only used one of them.
All right.
But isn't that also, if he's grappling with her, isn't that going to shock both of them?
Who knows? You got to do it.
Let's see what happens.
It's magic.
All right. I initiate my shocking grasp, and then I say something involving bones, some kind of pun.
A butt pun?
Bone,
your bone.
Bone
out.
Bone to know you. Bone.
Bone to know you.
Bone voyage. Adam Goldberg.
Adam Goldberg.
Adam Goldberg.
Take a bow. Stand up. Adam Goldberg.
Bone voyage. That's fantastic.
We could have been here all night and not top Bone voyage.
No, that you would not be.
I was like, hey mandible shit.
Yeah, Dan's was bone to know you.
This has never been my wheelhouse, puns, but bone voyage. Yeah, I do it with an Austrian accent, you know, bone voyage, and
grasping him with a shocking energy. Electricity crackles through his bony body, and you hear a sizzling from deep within his chest, and then he catches fire and falls to the floor, inert.
Looks like he skeleton fell apart. You can't improvise a pun, can you?
He fell like a skeleton of bricks.
You can't.
I win. I count it. I count it. I get 500 experience points.
He gave himself.
I'm having my own podcast over here.
It's high time. Well, we did it.
So we did it. So
Yeah.
Hey. I forge on towards the far side of the bridge.
You forge on towards the far side of the bridge. You see the gates of Fornheim standing tall and imperious. They slowly grind open, and you can hear a voice from within echo out like a trumpet. Welcome to Fornheim, the fortress of the mighty, the land of the strong.
I call back, weirdest welcome ever.
There's no
huge
response.
Huge waste of energy and manpower.
That would be funny if every time you drove into Indiana, you'd hear, Welcome to Indiana!
The sunshine!
This is it!
But also, like, if there was a locked gate that only opened after you fought four skeletons. Yeah. Just lock the gate harder.
A lot of mixed signals here, guys.
Yeah, make it clearer that we're not welcome. Metagaming?
No, mate.
We go in.
We go in.
Good call. Good call. Yeah, you enter the walls of Fornheim, and you see stuff.
I look around to see.
Yeah, sorry. I'll go. As you enter the massive gates, you're met with an awesome sight. The massive city within the massive walls is full of massively oversized buildings, with paths as wide as ponds and houses as big as castles, as well as towering giants. These blue-skinned beings with coarse, pale blonde and icy hair stand about 15 to 20 feet tall, clanking around in heavy metal armor, talking, conducting in business, and are shooting the breeze.
Literally.
Yeah, boy.
In sharp contrast to the massive blue figures and icy white trails, and icy white walls, you can make out specks dotted around the city. Black blobs that you recognize as more of those skeletons you fought earlier. That are marching and patrolling the streets as well as manning the gates and guarding the walls.
I thought this was like a dwarf town. I got confused.
Yeah. Maybe we should have done a little more reconnaissance before we came into this place.
That's something you can do.
Maybe we should get on top of each other's shoulders.
And put on a giant trench coat?
Yeah.
And hold our breath till we're blue in the face. So why are we in this town? I'm sorry.
Because a guy went, welcome. And we said, let's go. And then now we're in here.
No. But
before
before that.
Oh, we're looking for Admiral Darkstar.
Okay.
Yeah, he's to the north, and this is on your way to the north.
He's a bad guy.
Well, we were talking about raising an army here.
Right.
That should be no sweat.
We just killed a couple of their homies out front, didn't we?
But it seems like that's how you open the door.
Yeah. Maybe, okay. Those are expendable.
Who's the biggest and baddest here? Like, let's walk in there and talk a big game and say, look, we're not here to fuck around. We're here to get an army together and go kill Admiral Darkstar.
Yeah, I can use my, in a different way, I could use my diplomacy. Try to talk to them.
Okay.
But well, who do we talk to? Can we walk?
I look for the sweetest faced giant.
Okay.
Well, some guy who's clearly like nicer than the other, that's like giving water to the smaller giants. I'm just laughing. Someone drops a hat, he gives them their hat.
Scanning the city, you see what you make out to be the most jovial of the giants.
But not at anyone else's expense.
He's not laughing because he's picking on him.
Right. Okay. Just making sure.
I mean, that's fine. You see him. There. He looks jovial.
Okay. Do you guys mind if I approach?
Knock yourself out.
Yeah, we'll be back here.
Okay.
No, I go with her because we still have our little buddy pack.
Yes, thank you.
I go with her because I wouldn't miss this for the world.
I put on a shirt that says Team Giant on it, and I walk there.
Aaron talking to a non-player character is like every time the smoking man showed up in X-Files. I am riveted.
Yeah, so you and Quark are kind of walking up.
Well, we'll all go.
Okay. You're all walking up.
Right. Hello, sir. Looks like you're closer to heaven.
How does the joke land?
The giant looks as if perhaps he was bit by a mosquito, sort of like a.
And this is the happiest guy.
Yeah. And then he kind of looks around, and then he looks down at you, and then he points at you, and he's like.
It landed.
Yeah, I think it landed.
You got a chuckle.
Hey, good one.
Boy, since I was a young girl, I have dreamt of being in a town like this. What is it like to be the most fantastic looking... Okay, guys, what do we do?
No, you're doing great.
Yeah. Finish the fantastic looking thing.
You got it right where you want them.
Sir, what is it like to be the most fantastic looking and you emanate this joy? And me and my friends were very nice, peaceful people, and we just wanted to know what was happening here. And I've been talking for too long, and this is what I do. And I drop my papers like in a romantic comedy, and I hope that he's going to pick them up. Because I'm like, I'm Meg Ryan, and I'm just so flustered. Oh, I'm such a clumsy bitch. What do I do?
Does he help her with the papers?
No. His hands are probably too big to pick them up. But he doesn't help with the papers.
Sir Giant, we are travelers from the south, heading north. And, whoa, but did we stop here, Mr. Happy? I'm Robin Williams. We are in pursuit of a threat that threatens all of what's this planet called?
Earth.
Earth.
I am kind of standing behind all of them and just instinctively grab the handle of my sword.
I should tell them that I'm like a very well-known singer-songwriter.
I move my hands like I'm about to take off my tiny little clothes.
We request an audience with your leader, if you have one, or the commission that leads you.
But you're probably the leader, right? I mean, he looks like the leader.
Either that or a model.
He kind of just looks at you guys all saying and doing these things that you're describing, saying and doing.
Can he not hear us?
No, he is. He's exactly hearing you right now, and I'm describing that. And he is hearing. He's like, yeah, but he's listening, and he's looking at you guys do stuff, and then he's like, so you're looking for the Jarl?
Yeah,
yeah,
we're looking for the Jarl.
Yeah,
that's
it.
I don't even
That's
know why exactly. I forgot the word.
That's exactly
it.
Right. Oh, we should have said that when we first showed up.
Well, it ain't just anyone that can see the Jarl.
Okay, yeah. Who can see the Jarl?
Only the strong. Did you hear that thing that was said when you entered the city?
No, we were busy mocking it.
We are strong. We slayed a couple of...
Tell them that! No!
Dire wolves.
Good save, bro.
Yeah, yes, I've plucked many a dire wolf from my garden.
I don't think he knows what that word means.
He grows wolves.
This guy rocks. Can we just hang out with him for a while?
Well, if there was a way that we could prove our strength other than getting in your, not to put too fine a point on it, but less than hospitable threshold. tough ice city. We would love to prove our strength and or just have our strength taken as a flyer and get an audience with aforementioned Jarl.
Also, if you giants enjoy a show by tiny people, maybe the four of us could put on a small show.
It's true. We are singer-songwriters.
I recently gotten into doing some sketch comedy stuff.
I've heard enough of this, says the barbarian. I'm as tough as any man here, giant or no.
Then prove it.
I'll show me the way.
Punch me.
Okay, I go up to Quark. And I go, hey, insolent person. And I'm winking at him. We're gonna do like a Star Trek. Movie.
I got you.
Hey, shut your mouth, you little fucker.
I'm wanted on 12 different planets.
Yeah, well, you're not so tough.
And I get in there and I say, no, lay off him. I drop my papers again.
Stop that.
I can't help it.
I take Sharpie and I give him a little wink, like we're good.
I return the wink.
And I pick him up over my head and start spinning him around.
Whoa! This guy's a real tough customer.
And I find the biggest, busiest ice road, and I throw him down like at a roadhouse bar top, like and just slide him down.
But I'm so much bigger than you.
Bonk. In the chaos, I go off in a corner and I tie a rope to a knife.
Be prepared. Always be prepared.
Okay. You attempt this display of mock violence, and it's really pitiful. Like it's not working. Oh. It's not working. And then then he throws you. And you go skidding down this ice road, and then he's like, "That's pretty tough. I gotta admit."
Wait, when I throw Sharpie?
Yeah.
So now he likes that.
As pitiful as it was, it seemed to have impressed him.
So now we go to see the Jarl?
He's like, "Yeah, you know, I mean, that's, if you guys are really that tough, but you might have to pull that shit again in front of some other giants."
I got bits.
Yeah. I think we just accidentally blew the roadie. classic mistake.
Classic. Real amateur move.
Pink Floyd's in the green room.
All right, but lead the way, sir.
He's like, I don't lead. Follow the silent servants. He kind of points at a line of skeletons that are kind of patrolling through the city. They're led by one of these skeletons is just ablaze on fire. He's just lit on fire.
I say, thank you, sir. You are truly the most joyous creature that we have encountered in a long time.
So there's a skeleton on fire?
Yeah, it's kind of walking around through the city, melting ice and snow, and there's like a column of steam kind of rising off of it.
Cool.
But they're just walking in a line.
All right, well, we should follow that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you still have your Giants t-shirt on?
Yeah, I have Team Giants, and I've added Blazing Skeleton also. And on the back it says, my favorite movie is Ghost Rider.
I start whistling the theme from Bridge Over the River Kwai.
Wait, you sing when you whistle?
Well, I don't know how to whistle.
I can't whistle either.
High five, bro.
Yeah. So few people don't know how to whistle.
Anyone can whistle.
No.
But that's a different story. So we're following these silent leaders. Silent whatevers.
Yeah, the silent servants. They're just kind of... You really can't control this group.
I can't really whistle on it.
That was a great try, Dan.
Hey, it's us or hang out with your dad. You pick.
Hey, man.
I walk up to one of the silent servants and say, excuse me, gentlemen, we're looking for Jarl. You'd be so kind. You saw what I did to my friend over here. I threw him a good 50 meters down the ice road. Make it snappy and show us the way.
No, Jesus. Don't be aggressive.
They respond to might here.
Its
Chris.
Head kind of turns towards you, and its eyes kind of like glow with a blue flame, and you can hear a voice out of its chest. It's teeny and mechanical sounding. It says, "Don't bother the silent servants.
I was just told to come over to you."
Well, they're walking.
We just follow them. Yeah. We follow.
Oh, okay. We're following.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry,
that's happening.
All right. So I was just trying to be tough.
I want to get one of those chest plate things for me, so that when I fart,
it wasn't this person.
So people think your chest farted?
It's like blaming it on the dog. You know, you fart and then.
It was me, the chest plate.
Yeah. I thought when you fart, it just emits a louder mechanical fart to hide.
I didn't think it through. I just the dots I was connecting were in this order: silent but deadly,
right. Silent servant.
I kind of, and then from there I was off roading. I was relying on the statistical chance of me being funny when I talked, and I blew it, as I do 7 out of 10 times.
No.
So we're following.
There's a lot of math to it.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Dan, have you been blaming it on the dog? We have a dog.
And it farts a lot.
Yeah.
And I have ramped up my farting. It's true.
You have. When Dan was getting his endoscopy, there was a page in the big stack of papers that he had to sign that said.
When the camera goes down, it pushes a lot of air through you, so you make sure you release the air.
Pre-fart.
Yeah, it was giving you permission to fart, thing. This is neither the time nor the place.
All right, so we're following the silent servant.
Yeah. They take you around through the city, and you're kind of going by these little snowed-in little huts that are weird because, you know, this is a giant city, and these huts wouldn't fit them. Anyway.
But the skeletons are normal size,
that's
right?
That's true.
Do they have doors?
You can't tell because they're just covered in snow past the door, up to their little roofs.
I stop at one. Come on.
Okay.
I brush some snow away. I'm looking for a little door.
It has a little door.
I'm going to knock on the door with my Gandalf staff.
There's no response.
I'll be back later.
Continuing on, you go.
Man, you got balls, man.
You know, that was a great, what is it called? Ding and ditch? What's it called?
Yeah, ding dong ditch, yeah.
Yeah.
Ding and ditch.
We didn't do that.
In Pakistan, there's no dong.
Ding and ditch. No. It's a ding and ditch.
Ding! Runaway.
You have to be in an actual ditch.
Do doorbells sound different in Pakistan?
I don't know. No, the same.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was just wondering.
Yeah, they're not like.
Because the animals.
They're not like, ha!
No.
I mean, sirens sound different in every country.
They just say death to America when I.
Death to America! Death to America! I guess they're not home.
Yeah, oh, somebody's here. All right, so we're following?
Yeah. You go up a massive icy staircase and into a large kind of castle within the city made out of ice. It's all ice. You arrive in a massive room with a ceiling hundreds of feet tall. High. Whatever.
Hello.
Massive gold statues line the room, and standing in the center of the statues is a massive blue giant, easily 30 feet tall. He wears a great magenta breastplate and wears a huge brown fur cloak off some oversized beast. His booming voice echoes through the icy chamber. I am Limdahl, the Jarl of Fordheim. Bow to my might!
Pretending to have met him previously, I scream out, so nice to see you again!
Bow to his fucking might!
Yeah.
Maybe he'll think that we know each other.
I bow to his might for sure.
I say this as I am bowing to his might.
Okay.
We definitely blew the roadie.
I bow to his might.
Okay.
I reluctantly bow. I kind of...
Thank you.
Might bowed to.
And for that, I thanked you.
Gratitude received.
What brings you to Fornheim?
We're
the
looking
frozen
for some...
city.
Yeah, it's like an OCD thing that he has to say the entire thing.
Well, it's on their license plate frame.
We're looking for some Yammers. Yellers.
Wait, what?
Yakars. What are they? Yallers?
Jarl. He's the Jarl.
Jarl is the king.
Jarl means
Jarl
king.
Means king.
As I'm falling to my knees, I say, oh, I'll never fall in love. My career is too important.
She keeps dropping papers.
What's on these? I pick up the papers. And what the fuck is on these things?
No.
I read your papers.
Yeah, it just says, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. Over and over. And we're terrified.
I didn't really realize he was a Yaller.
Oh, Jarl of Fornheim. Frozen City.
Yaller?
Jarl.
I know. I'm sorry. Okay.
Gateway to the mountains.
A great city by a great lake.
Yeah. The blue diamond of the north.
Old Snowy. It is our grand pleasure, a pleasure only exceeded in size only by your stature and might, that we arrive here in your slippery, sticky halls.
In a good way, in a good way.
Oh, I am overcome by your power, and I fall down. I drop one paper.
One would no more dare to offend thee than one would dare to stick one's tongue on a common surface.
Have you seen Christmas Story? Hey, Christmas.
I take out my sword and
no, bro.
And I go, pardon me, but can I cleave my way through all the bullshit?
Whoa. Oh boy.
Fonzie's in town.
And I put my sword back away with a whoop.
He puts it away.
Well, yeah, I took it
out. Okay, well, I mean...
I'm not going to walk around with it out.
You just took it out?
I took it out.
You're just trying to cut the red tape?
I was making a point. Like,
right. He regards your social maneuver.
Great. Listen, Limdahl, was it?
Limdahl.
My name is Quark.
Well met.
My friends and I are after a certain Admiral Darkstar. Are you familiar with this gentleman?
Oh, I'm familiar with this gentleman.
What's your take?
I'm not a fond of him.
Yeah. But we're
neither
we're
same,
no, he's the worst.
You saw the air quotes around gentlemen, right?
Yeah.
Right. Well, we have one mission and one mission alone, and it's to take him down. We could certainly use a little assistance because, as you see, we're just four tiny little fuckers.
You could use some assistance.
I just said that.
But you have something I could use.
Oh, okay. Oh. Great. This is going to be great.
What's the expression on his face right now, Spencer?
It's holding all the cards. It's
all
that
right.
Expression.
Fair enough.
What is it you want from us?
Oh, just a few of your fragments of power.
Oh, boy.
Can we have a sidebar?
Yeah. Gentlemen, do you think he's talking about my business papers?
Well, I think we should definitely try.
There was no business. One page was just a bunch of drawings of dicks.
Look,
and balls.
I'm going to be a magazine editor, executive, business merger lady someday, and I've got to take all my ladies' by pa- Okay, stopping. Okay. Do you have shards of power, right?
Your are those dad's? Like the amulet of Ottoman stuff?
Nah, these are stuff that you've collected. Sharpie, yeah, but
this isn't, guys. The shards of power. If Admiral Darkstar wants all of those, I feel like what if this guy is just lying to us and works for him? He's going to hand them all over to him.
Yeah. Should we ask him if there's something else that he would want instead?
What do we get in return for these shards? Like exactly?
I will give you some of my finest horses, as well as a regiment of 6 frost giant warriors to aid you.
For how many
horses,
shards?
Horses.
I want all of them.
You want all their shard? All right.
Sorry,
bar.
I've had a tough day.
Sir, is there something else that you would take stuff instead of shards?
Most of the shards.
I have goggles of night. Do you want that? You take that instead of the shards?
No.
Can somebody who's got more wisdom than me sense motive on this guy?
You fail to sense his motive.
I asked somebody else to do it.
Somebody else also fails.
All right, I think we gotta
get my own dice.
We gotta put a bookmark here because we're.
It's time.
We're in the Hall of the Frost Giant.
All right, Jarl Cliffhanger.
All right, thank you, Kumail Nanjiani.
Thank
you, Aaron McGathy. Thank you, Spencer, for your dungeon mastery. Please, on Saturday, come to the Silent Movie Theater. Google it. Harmon Quest, it's called, in cooperation with Cine Family. Come to the thing at the thingamabob.
All right, it's time. It's showtime. We're done, baby. You want to say a nice little lesson learned?
What have we learned? Gay people should be allowed to be gay. If you fuck around with that, Satanists will turn your dead grandmas gay.
Some Black Panthers are Irish.
Black Panthers should not be exiled to Tanzania because that guy could have been doing a lot of good here. Instead, he's got an orphanage over there.
And it's possible to have a thing called Jeep Butt.
Yeah. Altogether, a wonderful... and San Diego can go fuck itself, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Downtown mostly. But mostly what I think I've learned is that we love you, as always. Thank you for coming to Harmontown. Have a good night, Walter. Wrong music! We keep clapping! There we are. Oh, my God. Thank you so much, Anatoly and Auntie... Adam Goldberg for Bon Voyage. That's what we should have said. Dan, we should have just ended with Bon Voyage.
Bon Voyage.
Bon Voyage, one and all.